Yeah.
More concurrent.
So I would like to call this Board of Education meeting for December 18th, 2017 to order. May I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Here.
Mrs. Hickey.
Here.
Mr. Martieri.
Yep.
Mr. Moore.
Here.
Dr. Thompson is not here. Ms. Williams.
Here.
All right, so the first thing we always do is recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. Nothing signed up, I don't think. Did you just sign up to make a comment?
No.
Would you like to?
No.
All right. So seeing none, we'll move on to an approval of the agenda. May I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Mr. Martieri.
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
All right, communication.
No.
None?
I don't believe there are any.
None.
Consent agenda. We need an approval for this. The consent agenda includes minutes from the Board of Education meeting of November 20th, 2017, the committee of the whole meeting December 5th, 2017, payrolls, orders relating to payrolls, bills, and a treasurer's report. May I get a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Second.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mr. Martieri.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
All right, board committees. Dr. Thompson isn't here yet, so let's jump up to personnel with Rich.
Nothing specifically on the personnel committee, but there'll be something related to administrative
staff.
Saw that news. Stacy, I see we have a little bit in the packet.
Dr.
Yes.
Thompson just arrived at 7:03.
Yes, we will have a first read later on this evening.
Great. Finance, Cal?
We're going to go over well, in the packet there are payables for the month, and we are also going to go over the tax levy today.
Excellent. Equity, there's nothing new to report. Facilities?
There is nothing new to report.
And Barb?
Tomorrow, I believe, Ed and Dawn and I are going to sit down and talk about the survey results from the Subcommittee on Collaboration survey that was distributed to, I believe, about in excess of 500 people within the community across different constituencies. And D90 looked pretty good. We got some very good comments. We'll have a more formal report after we've had a chance to sit down and discuss the results.
Great. And Dr. Thompson, have you had a chance to catch your breath?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, education.
So we had our meeting just this past week, and we had an update about the D90 Literacy Committee, some of the work that's being done through the K through 8, and they're coming up with some like overarching goals and working towards just implementing those, and just kind of talking about what we're trying to decide what the vision is going to look like in the classroom. In addition, they're working or going to work on the classroom books, looking at the inventory to make sure that we have a diverse set of books in the classroom as well as what's offered in the library. But there's more work in. Dr. Hawley, I know she'll have more information, more details about that. And in addition, we had an update from the tech committee, and they're working on quite a few things. They're discussing iPads going home for the three and fours, and just talking about how to implement that and working out some of the kinks, and maybe expanding it to all of the students in our district. And again, we have more information about that is that you kind of work on that as well.
Excellent. All right, that jumps us down to the district calendar review, Ed.
Yes. Page 52, I'm sorry. I was distracted. At this time of year, of course, no surprise, we have lots of kind of end of December activities forthcoming. The Winter Chorus Concert already taken place. It was excellent over at Roosevelt. We have a winter concert in Lincoln. The winter concert, you may ask, for Willard School is actually going to be held scheduled in February this year. February and March, so that's forthcoming, but that's a kind of a restructuring of dates. So all three of the schools will have had their concerts. Recall also that the band and orchestra had their kind of late fall, early winter concert back in November. So we have kind of concerts that seem to spread both sides of the winter break here in D90. Winter recess for students and staff runs from the 22nd until the 8th, and classes resume on the 8th. We will have our board committee of the whole meeting on January 9th at 7 p.m. right here. And then the next Board of Ed meeting is the 16th. You'll note, board members, that we have a number of kind of board events in January. The month may be compressed in terms of the number of days of student attendance, but we're grateful to our board because there's lots of meetings and unfortunately nights out. So we appreciate all that you do and the time that you give.
Okay. Gets us to the outside meeting report, part of the agenda. Council of Governments next meeting is in January on the 12th, so there's nothing new to report there. Rich?
December 7th was the community council meeting. I was unable to attend because I was at the winter concert at Roosevelt. Miss Willie did an awesome job, and the kids did had a wonderful performance. The topic of the community council agenda, the main presentation, was by three counselors and was about college readiness.
Excellent. Youth Network Council, Barb?
Youth Network Council met last week. Many of the same topics of conversation. We talked about the importance of the holiday food and gift basket program, which touches a lot of people within the communities, and enjoyed a lot of support this year. Makes a difference to a lot of people. There is continuing concern. Young people have a lot on their minds these days. Social media, among other things, and that conversation keeps coming up. The use of devices and the impact that that has on kids and anxiety and depression are things that that group sees, because they are mental health people who work with young people in our communities. So some of the same conversations keep coming up with slightly different contexts, but there's a lot of thought about what we can do to help with those issues. And it also comes up in these meetings that the efforts of this board in the directions of equity are being noticed and commented upon, and all in positive ways. So that's also a good thing to share. The efforts of the Inclusiveness Advisory Board are appreciated, and thought I'd pass that along. That's all I have on the Youth Network Council. The PTO Council did not meet in December.
Wise of them.
It is wise of them. They're too busy running the rest of the world to be together in December. So we don't see them again until January.
Great. Stacy, Inclusiveness Advisory Board?
Nothing new since our last meeting, and we're meeting again in January.
Okay. How about the River Forest Civic Association? Judy, Citizen Corps Council?
They are going to be holding their next meeting at the end of January, so there's nothing new to report.
Yeah, same with the West Cook Governing Board. Their next meeting is in March. Ed Red, the next meeting is in January. Tri-Board Collaborative Committee, we did meet again. We're discussing the best way to make permanent a couple of the areas of collaboration among the three districts, including professional development, annual meetings, and a couple of other things. So we're trying to be thoughtful about finding ways to make systematic the collaboration and the efforts on equity among the three districts, build it. So that's where we are on that group.
Was there an agenda yet, Ralph, for the... Is there going to be another equity town hall? Has that been decided?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that we want to put together. I think we decided at our tri-board meeting that, given the board training that's coming up in January, and given that we've invited the other boards to attend, mm-hmm. as well as the Culture and Climate Committee at Elk Park Forest High School, I think the library board and the village board. Hopefully from that, we'll get some ideas for what should be the agenda.
Great.
We didn't want to get in front of that particular convening.
I have a question. Is there a way to invite members from that board to our event January 31st and also from your board?
From the Youth Network Council?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure that there would be a way to do that. We've got a central connection point who can send out emails to everybody on that distribution, and they probably would like to be included in that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. We should get that done. And
the only request would be if if they get just some idea of the numbers that may.
Okay.
We would need a formal RSVP from everyone who wishes to attend, but.
We can include that in the email that you send out. You know, just compose
Tracy
it. Yes,
contact
Tracy if they'd like to come.
Dynamite.
So that
Thank
we have
you.
Some idea how much seating we need and all that kind of
Absolutely.
Stuff. Okay.
That's the meeting that Rich will be chairing. Am I correct? Because I'm not around on the 31st. Is that right?
That's correct.
So out of town.
Yes.
And so we can give someone Ralph's.
It'll be the most smooth run meeting of the year.
Aside from this one.
The River Forest Subcommittee on Collaboration.
More or less already touched on that. The main focus is the survey that we just got the results from. And we will be discussing that further after Ed and Dawn and I have had a chance to process all of that. But generally speaking, the communications from District 90 are well received. And so it's good news. But we'll have more specifics later on.
Did you get a good response rate on your survey?
We sent it out. The way that it was done was that each of the entities sent it out to all of their, all of the people on their email distributions. They sent the link. And we got more than 500 responses, and we did break them down into various different demographics.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them indicate that we did get responses from some people from whom we do not necessarily normally hear in 90. You know, we have our We do very well with communication with our families and people within our specific scope. But there were quite a few people, I think, who do not have children in the schools who also responded to that, which will be helpful to us.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So, Ed, that brings us to the district meeting agenda.
Right. So, the main district meeting we had this month was the Universal Design for Learning meeting. Board members will see that a copy of that agenda is in their packet. Really, the discussion was to look into breaking down the three principles of universal design, allowing the members to investigate one or the other of them in more detail, and then preparing information that hopefully they will present subsequently to the rest of the UDL committee in January on the area that they investigate. So the work continues. Thank you for your leadership with that, Allison.
Just to kind of chime in there, I attended a full-day workshop over the weekend on biliteracy for my job in my district, and the presenter from or the person who was presenting praised UDL as a way to have students who are working toward biliteracy, English learners, as a way for them to access curriculum in the classroom. So she praised the UDL process, and so I just make that connection that they're not the only ones out there who see it as valuable.
It's nice to see that the value of UDL outside some of the conventional ways that we in D90 have been thinking about supporting our teachers. There might be some opportunities for intersections of learning more. So, thank you.
Okay, Ed, you're still on. Superintendent's
okay,
report.
Okay, so we have several action items this evening, and a couple of them, of course, the board will recognize as kind of semi-annual responsibilities we have, but a couple of them are important annual responsibilities, and it's December, so that means it's tax levy time. So, Anthony, if you'd be so kind as to kind of walk us through particularly these first couple of items, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
So first is the adoption of the 2017 tax levy.
Sure, thanks. You'll notice that the certificate of tax levy that's up for a motion to be approved or adopted tonight is no different than the estimated levy that was shown and approved by you at the November meeting. Since it was not more than 5%, we did not have to hold a levy hearing. So all that's necessary tonight to adopt this levy, if you have no questions or thoughts about changing it, is to adopt this certificate of tax levy in front of you.
So are there any questions? When you went through the packet, looked at the numbers again, no questions? Then all we would need is a motion to approve the 2017 tax levy as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
This will be filed in the next couple days with the county. The next part that is up for approval and will also be filed if approved is the resolution authorizing a reduction of certain fund levies for this tax year. This is if when we do the levy, the assessed valuation is estimated and the new property growth is estimated. If those amounts come in differently than what we thought, based on what we're estimating the ending extension to be, we need to instruct the county clerk on how to do additional reductions if necessary. So if you do not do this resolution, they will do it pro rata across all of the levies, individual levies. We don't like that. We want to maximize as much as we can in as many funds as we can. So this resolution guides the county clerk to reducing specific fund levies based on what the resolution shows. Any questions about that? If not, I'm looking for a motion.
So moved.
Wait
a second. Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yep.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
The deadline for filing is the last Tuesday in December. This will be done in the next couple days. Then the next one is the semi-annual review of closed session meeting minutes. These are the minutes that we are looking to have you keep them closed, not open them for public review, including their audio recordings. And these are the list of the closed session meeting minutes since the last time you did this in June, which, as you can see, all the dates are since May, since the May ones weren't even approved by you at the June meeting. So these are all the ones from May to the current date, and the last one being October 3rd's Committee of the Whole. So I am recommending that these stay closed. I would need a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
The next one we do semi-annually is approving the destruction of closed session meeting audio tapes. While these are required to be 18 months, anything older than 18 months, the Department of Labor requires it to be 2 years, so you'll see a lot of these dates are those that are anywhere between 2 years and 2 years and 6 months old since the last time we did this in June. So these are the four meetings that I'm looking for a motion for approval to destroy or reuse these audio tapes.
So moved. Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Thank you.
And whatever will we do when the day comes that we can no longer get cassette tapes? Because it's coming.
It's coming, and probably not too long.
Either we will pay $3,000 for each cassette tape that we can find on eBay, or we'll find a more current and appropriate media.
Excellent.
Upgrade.
Something to look forward to. So the last action item tonight is a request for the board to please approve a revised board meeting calendar. This is a bit of a formality because obviously the board's already directed that we move that February meeting to January, but this does formalize your decision to change the February CAL meeting to the end of January. So we'd be requesting just a motion to approve the new.
So moved.
Give a second, please.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yep.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
So our first information item this evening is regarding the item is proposed Board of Education Ad Hoc Gender Inclusion Committee. And, both Ralph or I think are comfortable maybe speaking to that. I'd be glad to speak to it if you'd prefer, or would you rather, Ralph?
No, I'll just give my interpretation of what we're doing here. I think, you know, the equity committee made a big difference in moving forward our equity agenda, right? It helped recommend a bunch of policies to this board that this board adopted. It went through a very thoughtful process. It vetted out different ideas. It did research. I think that's a really good approach for this community and this board, frankly. I think that's the right way to do anything that may have some controversy attached to it and is very different from what we've done in the past. Now, obviously, we've been visited by advocates in the community on gender identity issues and a number of other issues in that area. I know this board wants to ensure that the environment in D90 is a welcoming environment for all students. But when it comes to adopting policies, we have to be, I think, thoughtful in making sure that we're getting the policy right, that we're looking at whatever evidence is out there, that we're looking at whatever best practices can be found, and that takes time. And I think it takes so much time, it should have an ad hoc committee. I would like two board members to co-chair that ad hoc committee, to work with Ed and identify community membership, et cetera, a similar model to the equity committee model. And charge it with coming up with some recommendations on policy in this area. And I think that that's the right way to go. It's a thoughtful way to go, and it's one that has a process attached to it that we know works and we can rely on. Ed?
I think you covered the landscape there. And so the thought would be to propose this for possible board consideration between now and January, and then, possibly bring that item forward for the board's consideration of a potential vote as an action item in January, and I guess the consideration.
How many members of the board would be on
two.
Such a two? Okay.
And would there be members of the community?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'd like to model it on the equity committee.
Okay,
where we had a couple of community members. We had, of course, Ed. We had two faculty. It's a nice model because you're getting input from all elements of D90, the community, the faculty, the administration, and the board. And the other thing I liked about it is what we did at the equity committee is, you know, the committee took its time reading through bunches of research and stuff like that. And I think that that's a great way to inform the deliberations at the board level, and it's an important issue. So it deserves a committee in my mind.
Are there any new laws that are going to go into effect in January regarding this issue?
There's court decisions most likely rather than new laws. I mean, the Obama administration, Department of Education issued a number of advisories on how to handle certain issues like access to locker rooms, et cetera, and then the Trump administration put a kibosh on all those advisories. So from a federal standpoint, there's really not a lot of guidance here. There has been some case law developed over time. So I think that that would be one of the things that the committee would probably go to our attorneys and get some sort of summary of the most relevant case law in a nice user-friendly format for the committee to consider as part of their deliberation, sort of as a starting point, and then maybe look at some other practices that have been instituted at other districts across the country. And I don't think we should limit it to Illinois. I think we should look at anyone that's doing something here, good, bad, or indifferent, we should learn from it, right? So.
But I like your approach, Ralph, because in every way where we've had desire to review more thoughtfully any board policies, and it's been done in that manner, there's always seems to be an outcome where it really does reflect River Forest as a community, River Forest's expectations, and just like every other policy that D90 has, it's really important that it reflects from a governance perspective your wishes as the Board of Ed, and obviously we're elected into your roles to represent the community, and it needs to be, like every other policy, it needs to be a reflection of how District 90 would like to see its schools managed and its students' needs met. It's a very sensible approach.
So your goal is to begin assembling a committee starting in January?
Yeah, and if anyone has any ideas, get those recommendations via email to Ed or me. And since I'm serving on the equity committee, I'm not going to serve on this committee just to get different board leadership involved, quite frankly.
Say the same for myself.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing, right? I mean, because we're pretty, and you're also deeply involved in the inclusivity advisory board, so it'd be good to have other voices take a leadership role here and bring, like I said, bring recommendations, bring information to the board. Certainly the board will settle the final policy, but it's the best way to go. And we're building leadership on the board, too. It's an important thing to do.
Nicole, is that something you consider doing?
I consider it, yes.
But I would, you know, I think your perspective from the medical profession would be valuable.
Yeah, I consider it. I just have to figure out the timing and when and the where, so I need to get that information.
Right.
Well, and the nice thing about presenting this initially as an information item is that it does give that window of time before you'll be bringing it back to the board in January to actually, you know,
establish the committee.
Approval.
Right.
A little time to think about who else to be included.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the nice model the equity committee provides is also the time is not overwhelming. I mean, we meet 3 or 4 times
a year.
During a year.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it happens in between meetings.
You got to do your homework.
Right, but it makes the meetings really efficient.
Right.
And not overwhelming time-wise.
Do you see this group needing to consult with the Equity Committee just to benefit from the kind of thought, some of the kinds of thought processes that have gone on up to now for equity and inclusiveness issues? I know you don't want the same people directly involved.
No, it's not even that. I don't think there's any problem at all with cross-pollination. However, if we have 3 board members in a room discussing
anything
board policy,
right,
that's an open meeting.
Right.
So we'd have to notice that up if there were board members from the Equity Committee involved there. I don't see any way around that. That's an open meeting, clear open meeting. It's something subject to the Open Meetings Act.
Okay.
You could certainly, I mean, we have, and Ed's got all the agendas, et cetera, I think, historically, that the Equity Committee has had, that would certainly be made available to this committee. And I mean, if maybe at an organizational meeting, we could notice it up as an open meeting to have Stacy and I come in there and chat about the where's and why's and how's. Certainly
I just would
like
us to
members.
Learn from a previously successful way to set all of this up, share that information.
Yep. We just
so we don't reinvent the wheel.
No wheel reinventing. Although
nope.
It's going to be a very different process, I think, in a number of ways, and some more challenging issues. I mean, I think what you'll find is there's some decent case law for guidance. There's some decent science on the impacts of the children going through gender identity issues and development. And there's very little in the way of best practice or evidence on how best to put in a policy to meet the needs of the kids. So at least that's my superficial review of what's available out there now, because I've been trying to look at as much as I can on that, and this is what I've been finding. Whereas the Equity Committee had the advantage of we could find a bunch of research-based practices, evidence-based practices specifically targeted at eliminating achievement gaps that worked and were effective. And we've seen them embodied in a lot of the policies we've adopted here, including the UDL from a pedagogical standpoint, even the hiring practices and a couple of other things that we've done here at the board level. So professional development, et cetera.
I think it's very timely and important, especially over the weekend, the CDC, Center for Disease Control, was directed not to use the word transgender by this current administration. So I think, and going to what you're talking about in terms of evidence-based, because we are a very deliberate board. We use research and evidence-based research in order to make our decisions, and this is one that is a little is newer in terms of empirical research. So I think doing our own work is important because others may not.
And you know, these cases, if you go through the cases that are pending, I mean, a lot of them are cases predicated on a district that thought it made a good effort, and the effort turned out to not be so good. So really getting it right is a premium, right? From a governor's, yeah, that's exactly right, Judy. It's well said.
And it's also a very individual challenge for each child who goes through it, which makes it challenging from a policy standpoint.
So good. So I think in January we'll bring it back. We'll entertain a motion to actually establish the committee and get a couple of volunteers to be the directors that serve on the committee.
And if folks would like to just chat with either one of us, I guess, about what that might entail or kind of how the equity committee, for example, has done its work in the past or what the time commitments are, anything like that, I'm sure you'd both be willing to take those calls too.
And don't, it doesn't matter, you can take as much of Ed's time as you want.
Fair enough.
Because he has so much that we have to
have. Fair enough.
But thank you. I think that was a good discussion, and I'm glad the board feels this way. I think it's the right process.
So the next item on the information items agenda is entitled Student Walking Routes to School. And as much as anything, I know that Ralph and I had a chance to communicate on the side. We did want to make sure that the board kind of knew about the intended next steps regarding ensuring that we're making our student routes to school as safe as possible. We're all aware that tragically in our community we had a student injured last week as a pedestrian walking to school, and of course I think it's heightened all of our awareness about the importance of underscoring safety as an ongoing concern. We're very grateful actually to the village who that very day reached out to District 90 with the offer to meet with the village administrator and the village president to open a conversation about
yep.
possible next steps. So it'll probably be premature to talk about what that will look like. We are not sure. We meet with them this week. Anthony, as our director of facilities, is also going to be with us. He has been, from the District 90 side, really been largely responsible for managing a lot of our partnership with the village on crossing guards, and so his knowledge and expertise is going to be greatly appreciated. But the goal again is to do everything in our power to continue to make pedestrian safety, not just for students but all pedestrians in the village, as safe as possible. And there could be any number of outcomes there, but we need to get started by getting, I think, some of the folks in the room that can help to identify possible solutions.
I just want to echo the thanks to the village trustees for moving so quickly on this and saying if there's a need in the community, let's at least talk about it to see if we can't find a way to address it. So kudos to Kathy Aducey and the village board.
Absolutely. So more to come on that item after the meeting, of course. We'll make sure we communicate back with the board of that as soon as possible.
Policy first reading. You guys saw in your packet there are just four somewhat meaty ones that may inspire some discussion. One of them, the technology one in particular, I think comes out of, and Ed, correct me if I'm wrong, comes out of a discussion we had at the board level about wanting to think proactively about how to use technology in our classrooms and in our buildings. So we're anxious to hear if what you see in front of you addresses the concern that was raised. So, Ed, I will turn it over to you to walk us through these.
Okay. And if it's all right, Stacy, maybe I'll just do it in the order that they're laid out
yep.
and kind of keep the sequence going. So the first item is something the board's familiar with from conversation, back earlier this fall. Really the goal, this is policy 750, entitled School Admissions and Student Transfers to and from Non-District Schools. The goal of working with the board attorney in drafting this potential language was to try to answer questions for families about the district's position and expectation for children starting in kindergarten and subsequently in first grade. We have a lapse of information. There's actually no information in this current board policy about students who may be needing to start kindergarten or first grade later than the normal sequence, and we felt like that's something that's really missing in a policy where all of the other possibilities are outlined pretty carefully. The recommended language here, you'll note, is very specific to that issue and as a corollary to kindergarten, as a corollary to first grade. But one of the things we did want to highlight and bring some attention to is that the recommendation would be that this policy would not go into effect immediately, that it would go into effect July of 2019, with the intention of making sure that families who had younger children and maybe were considering holding their child out from kindergarten would know far in advance that come the fall of 2019, this will be the district's expectation for children. You possibly have heard of the term redshirting. That term has different connotations for people, but it's important to underscore that while there are some families that keep their children from starting kindergarten or first grade at a certain point for any of a number of reasons, it's more challenging in the kindergarten scenario because the state does not require children to attend kindergarten. And so if a child doesn't, you don't really know, as the school that's enrolling the child, you don't really know why that is. And it's really not our place to necessarily know. It is our place to try to support families.
Which brings the legal question that I had about this policy. Mm-hmm. So K isn't mandatory.
Correct.
But attending school at age 6 is?
Well, that's the commonly expected age at which a child would begin first grade. So it's not, of course, the child could have a birth date, any one of 365.
I'm asking the question, I mean, I remember having some conversations with the folks at the Management Alliance. Is it now mandatory that at age 6 your kid is either in a school or homeschool, but they're being educated?
I can't imagine that it would be mandatory at that date. It is mandatory that a child begin school in first, and so that they're enrolled in first grade, and that could happen at a number of different periods, depending upon when the child's actual birth date is.
Okay, well, okay.
If it's a summer birth date, for example.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying what I want clarity on is if there's a legal requisite around the age of a kid.
We'll find out.
It has to be in school at a certain age.
No problem.
And kindergarten is not mandatory, given the parents the right to request that their kid at a legal age who technically has to be in school could be put in a non-mandatory program. Does that create a legal issue, too? So I don't know the answer. I might be asking a question that's something that's under discussion right now with the State Board of Education rather than is current law.
Posed the way you asked it, I don't know the answer either, but I know our attorney will.
And so. I honestly don't know. So yeah. I just flagged it because I know there's discussions around this, and so we just have to make sure that whatever we're doing is going to be fully compliant with whatever laws happen to be.
Absolutely. Good idea. The language in blue here was drafted by our attorney, but I'd like to circle back to her and ascertain if it's that specific.
Yeah, and this honestly may be something that ISBE is considering issuing as a ruling,
okay,
or rather than something that's out there. It's just at a meeting of the Management Alliance down in Springfield 3 weeks ago, this issue came up.
Well, it could be perfect timing. It saves us from stepping in the wrong spot.
I have a question about this. Okay,
sure.
My son was redshirted, so he turned 7 in August, right before he started first grade. He didn't attend kindergarten. He was in Montessori, and we just kept him in Montessori an extra year. So would he not have been eligible to go to first grade?
Yes, that's correct.
He would not have.
Well, under this policy language,
he would not have been able.
That's correct.
Wow.
If I understand the way you characterize it properly,
so
he would
have
be
had to.
Well,
he would have to go to second grade.
If you had kept him as the extra year in Montessori with a first grade curriculum, yes. They were the equivalent of a first grade curriculum. See, one of the challenges that we run into, there are a couple of issues at foot here. You can have a situation where a child shows up at school with a year older than the other children and not having had kindergarten. You can also have the situation where the child shows up having had kindergarten in another school. And we typically have tried in the past to consider that as us just making a subsequent grade level placement. Just like if a child had showed up here in fourth grade, having satisfactorily completed third grade somewhere, that it's a placement decision as opposed to an enrollment decision. But if a child has never had that previous curriculum at all, again, then you don't really know what the reasoning is for that. Did a parent elect not to enroll the child in kindergarten, whether in a public school or a private? Did they elect not to homeschool them? They're not required to. More recently, here in River Forest, the more frequent situation is when a family has had the child exposed to a kindergarten curriculum elsewhere and then comes to River Forest and wants to enroll them a year older in kindergarten for the second time. And And that's can be problematic on several, you know, on several levels. It can be problematic for the child if they've already been exposed to a curriculum and then they're taking it again. It can be problematic in the classroom setting if the child manages it fine, because they've got not only developmentally, you know, physically are they older, but now they've got an advantage other, over other children that can make it difficult to instruct, you know, the whole group. It presents a number of possible issues.
So this, for clarity, this is saying that transfer students, so a student who attends kindergarten here could be asked to repeat kindergarten?
Sure.
Okay, so that doesn't change because that's been practiced all along. And a student that comes in having experienced kindergarten in another district would be required to go to first grade
and
unless,
is age appropriate.
Unless
yes,
you, because I think it's superintendent. So
yes,
there's like
we do
that
have
six
that
week.
Out. If
so
we
you could assess the student and say there's a need for the student to repeat
absolutely
kindergarten.
Or the sending school, if the child had the kindergarten curriculum elsewhere, could indicate that the child did not satisfactorily complete it, and then we would place them again in K, because obviously we do want them to have a successful sequence. But it would stop the practice of someone doing as I previously described, having two kindergartens, essentially, one of them here in DMEC.
Okay.
So then, just to clarify, in Judah's example, that child would be placed in second grade.
Again, we would have to know what the sending curriculum was.
Okay.
So it's both the function of the age and the prior
what
instruction.
Prior.
A Montessori can be challenging because it might not be a clean, clear-cut first grade curriculum. There might be more wiggle room in that kind of scenario as opposed to a case where a child is finished in another school district, for example, kindergarten and first.
Right.
If they satisfactorily complete first and they're age appropriate, we're putting them in second.
So in Judy's example, we would base the placement on assessment?
That's a great question. The principal would probably be heavily involved in that. We would contact the sending school, find out about, again, the degree which they did or didn't satisfactorily complete their curriculum. The flexibility in the Montessori curriculum makes it less explicit.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we certainly
but
could
you,
assess the child. But then, of course, the parent's position might also be a factor. You know, just because the school, in a Montessori situation, the school describes the child's performance as satisfactory. If the assessment then subsequently does not, and the parent feels as though the child should stay behind, this policy would allow the principal to request the superintendent to allow the child to start at grade level. But what it's really intending to do is provide guidance on typical which there's a dearth of right now. So, the next policy that the committee has recommended is specific to 6:210 instructional materials. As Stacy had said, the board had been seeking a little bit more language about the Board of Ed's philosophy of tech and electronic materials, what they're for, what their intention is, that they are not a replacement for instruction. You can obviously read the language here specifically, but it was intended to kind of reframe now that we are a one-to-one district and do have an important place with instructional tech, the ways in which technology is a component of the district's instructional approach, but is not the reason for the district's instructional approach. So the section in yellow at the bottom, you'll note there was some discussion at the policy committee meeting about this language in red. We debated whether or not it was wise to actually create formal guidelines or if they would be constraining. And the language that the committee actually landed on and is suggesting is that the district or the designee of the superintendent actually should provide ongoing professional development for faculty and staff about the optimal use, that would be more important than some, you know, guidelines that were in a manual, but instead there should be an ongoing attention paid to PD and training on not just when to use technology, but when not to use technology, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Stacy did a great job, I think, earlier talking a little bit about again, the context for that.
Is the second part of that really policy, though? Or is the second sentence there more an administrative guideline. It doesn't belong in a policy.
Which
meeting.
Sentence?
The staff members shall select technology and electronic materials in a deliberate and thoughtful manner. How do you monitor that? To expand learning opportunities while balancing the importance of face-to-face instructive active learning and social interactions. It doesn't sound like a policy to me. It sounds like an administrative directive on how they do it, unless you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I can go either way. We certainly can pull it out and put it in the AP if you prefer.
I mean, what do you guys think as board members? Does that sound like a policy? Or does it sound like an
administrative? It sounds more like an administrative guideline, but I do think it's something that we want in writing somewhere. I don't know whether policy is the right place for it.
Right. I guess that's really the main thing.
That's really the question.
How do you monitor that? How does the board have any role in that or oversee? I mean, I don't see a governance role here.
And I'll take responsibility or even blame for that language being there, because when I talked with the board attorney from my notes at the board retreat, one of my big takeaways was that the tenor of the board's discussion at that point was ensuring that the administrators made it clear that technology is supposed to be used as a tool to support high quality instruction, but not the vehicle. And so that's kind of where I maybe possibly gave her the wrong advice about wanting that element.
I'll defer to the board on this. When I read it, I read how would this be monitored, and then my thought was, is this really a board role? Is this really a policy role? Is this an administrative guideline that
it's
the administrator should
change? It's certainly a value that this board has expressed, and I can see why Ed came up with this, but I don't know if policy is the right place for it.
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, we talked a lot about it with Kevin in our policy meeting, because from his point of view, you know, what would he tell someone to do, right? If someone reads that, what do they then go and do that they will be held accountable for?
Right.
But I do think it belongs somewhere, and I don't know what the right answer is.
You're an educator. What do you think?
I think when you look at dictum like this, which is actually, you know, language expressed in the law and the interpretation of the law to show the reason why the law was made. So I think adding some of that, you know, allows us and further future boards to understand what we're looking at.
So you're saying it helps hold it up?
I don't think it's totally superfluous. I think if you leave it, it allows us to kind of understand why we're doing it. I think this affects personnel, like you're saying, probably more than the board here, and how do you check mark who's taking the professional development that we've offered, which there are ways to do.
I don't think Ralph's point is exactly that it's superfluous. I think that it's that it is not in line with other policy that we have documented, because it is not measurable. And it's in there to express a value, but not necessarily to be enforceable or measurable.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're all kind of responding to, and I'm not sure exactly where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it probably is to some degree reflected in strategic planning initiatives from the larger standpoint of looking at our values. But I don't know that policy is where it belongs. I guess I'm with you on that. I'm not sure exactly what to do with it.
I think I'd be more comfortable if it was an administrative guideline issued by the administration to the faculty, because it seems like we're jumping into telling teachers how to teach from a policy standpoint, which that's not our job at the board level. It's your job.
Well, it's certainly not a problem to put it into the associated 6210 administrative procedure and memorialize it there.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Yeah, maybe that's the best place. I mean, I'd be a little more comfortable with that.
But just that second
You've got
sentence.
The JD.
Just that second sentence.
Just the second sentence. Yeah, not the first sentence.
So starting with staff members?
Yeah, that's our role.
Okay. Perfect. And did you feel that the addition of the other language does adequately reflects, I realize you may want to consider it over the course of the coming month, but does it kind of adequately reflect the spirit of the conversation you'd had on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it accurately reflects the board's concerns.
Great. Well, the credit goes to our the board attorney. She did a nice job of kind of flesh that out. The third item is policy 6235, which also deals with technology. This is specific to computer network and internet safety. And these changes were made to ensure that the policy dovetails with the language that you were considering in the other.
So we have to make the same condition, correct? Staff member shows.
The deliberate and thoughtful manner is a tool to enhance students.
Okay.
I would make that
just so it,
again,
it lines up.
Yeah.
Once again, that lines up with the other one.
Very good. And then the last item is on residents. And this one, I apologize in advance. We get a little bit into the weeds here, but part of the reason for that is because we really wanted to make sure that the board policy, this is 760 on residents, not only reflects the board's wishes, but also the legal requirements and best practice. And the board will recall we'd had a suggestion from an outside group that we take a look at this, and the attorney indicated that actually while the policy is in pretty good shape, some of our district documents, registration documents, enrollment documents, are not consistent with board policy language mm-hmm. and practice. So the policy recommendations, of course, are here for the board's review. We've also included a whole bunch of the registration and enrollment documents as exhibits. But the important thing, I think, probably for the board to know tonight is that these recommended policy language changes do reflect best practice as indicated by the Illinois State Board of Education. And they will guide the changes that will subsequently need to be made in the actual enrollment documents, which there are several that follow behind, if the board approves these changes. And we're actually pleased to be doing it this time of year because we'll be ready now once we start launching enrollment, the enrollment process come March, which, believe it or not, is when we begin registration for the subsequent year.
The only question that I have, and I'm sure we talked about this, I can't remember, what guides the whether substitute documents are acceptable? Is that just at your discretion?
Yeah, I think that was the attorney's recommendation. You know, our preference will be that people comply with the list just for ease of maintenance. These documents are scanned electronically and held securely by the district, so it's a lot easier if we have from people who can provide them
mm-hmm.
the documents that are, you know, the primary artifacts. But if we need to make exception, I think the idea would be that that's available to people. And in some of these areas, of course, some of these categories, they've got 6 or 7 alternatives to choose
mm-hmm.
from. Some of them are really quite manageable, just also for the board's knowledge. Like for an individual to secure voter registration, while it's yet one more task for someone to do, you know, if someone is coming in to enroll their child, they can literally walk across the street to Village Hall, complete that process, and return with that piece of evidence if they need to. So we do, you know, try to help encourage people and steer them towards things that will be the easiest maybe for them to secure. Some of these things are also available online, and our registrar, Josephine, has been fantastic on many occasions about sitting with someone and helping them to log into an account, printing the document right there, scanning it into the office, moving on. So.
Okay.
What, to add to that, though, one important thing, just for clarity, some of what was previously in place required that the individual make an appointment with the superintendent
mm-hmm.
to get an exception. And the board attorney was very clear that that could have a chilling effect on someone.
I think she said it like that.
She did, just trying to enroll their child. And so I think that's what's nice here, too, is that it provides some of those alternatives without an individual having to jump through hoops that are either, you know, perceived as onerous or possibly even embarrassing. That's certainly not the goal of enrolling someone in the school district for the first time. That's not the experience we want to have.
Right.
So those are the board policy recommendations for first reading. And we'll make those changes that the board requested and bring them back next month. The next item that we have in the board packet is an administrative staffing overview. And Ralph had asked that I take a look at some of the information that's contained within here, some of this data about how District 90's administrative staffing holds up against some other comparable districts in the Collar counties. We've used different groups of comparables on many occasions. In some cases, the board will be familiar with the idea of using the WSCAE districts or other just high-performing districts when we're looking at student achievement. What we tried to do here with this list of comparables was kind of cut across both of those things. We looked at relatively similar size. We looked at relatively similar level of community resources, numbers of schools. Student performance was a factor, certainly not the primary one. And we used them as kind of a comparison group to hold our administrative team up against in terms of how many administrators we have, how they're allocated, what the responsibilities are, and whether or not D90 is kind of consistent. So you have, the board, of course, has an overview sheet to kind of provide some context, and then in the public packet, we actually have those comparable districts listed here, as well as the roles of the administrators that are in those districts. Obviously, the size of enrollment is a big factor. The aggregate number of administrators, the nature of their work, and I think, you know, certainly board members may wish to discuss or share their thoughts, but I think based upon our student enrollment and the way our administrators are allocated, that we are very competitive. The board also has a copy, actually, of the raw data on page 116, but since it includes some elements that were specific to individual employees in other districts, we didn't feel the need to obviously make that a public document. But I'd like to thank Pam Jenkins, our HR specialist, for her work in helping to compile this information. And for that matter, our administrative team, for the work that they do in moving our district forward.
I thought this is important information on board to have. I mean, obviously, we're going into a negative spending position in a year. And so questions will come up in the community appropriately, I would think. Are we overstaffed? Are we spending too much administration? Do we have too many administrators? That kind of thing. Well, you got to have some numbers to look at that, right? You can't just go by the seat of your pants. And I just wanted to arm the board with some data. So that was the whole reason I made this request for Ed, from Ed, and I appreciate you following up on it so quickly, Ed. But it's information I feel we need to have and we need to share with our community.
I also noticed, I think, in a packet with financials in it recently, that our comparative salaries for teachers are very much in line with other districts, but if we're looking at administration, we are considerably higher. Is that correct?
Well, it would have to be, I'd have to know which comparable districts you'd be looking at to answer that question.
It was financials that were given to us recently, and I can't remember which
ones. Wasn't the resident friendly?
It wasn't the resident friendly, but it was something else.
The report card.
It might have been the report card.
But it wouldn't have comparable districts on there. That would be only comparing to the state.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And statewide averages, we really, I mean, because they're driven down a lot by those very low spending, low labor markets, South I-80.
And we're not really sure that their data is gathering is exactly accurate either.
And I would take into account the years of service for administrators.
Right. And but I also, the other thing that you notice in reviewing this is that the position that comparably sized districts do not seem to have that we do is the special education specialist.
Director. They may be in a special co-op, possibly.
They could call it something different, but you don't see that here.
What happened in District 90, I'm really glad you asked that question, that caused us to actually appoint, at the time, our coordinator, special ed coordinator, to a director of special ed role was the dissolution of FEDSE. So previously, D90 was a member of a special ed co-op where certain services were provided by the co-op. And all of the member districts, and I try to do them by memory, but I end up leaving some out, there were five or six, were able to use the FEDSE director as the individual who played the role as the state-mandated director of special ed. But once FEDSE dissolved, and that was a mutual decision made by all of those member districts, that the services that we were getting there were no longer either available or necessary to be provided outside of the school districts, the state law requires that you have a director of special education. So any district that does not have a director of special ed, and of course it could be titled something else, another common name that's used is director of student services.
Okay.
But could be a member of one of those special ed co-ops. And here in Cook County, there are a number of them, and in the collar counties generally. You probably have heard some of the acronyms.
LADSE,
SACID, they're, you know, different regions.
NSSEA.
Some are very large, some are much smaller. LADSE is one that it's close by, so it might come to mind, but it's, you know, largely DuPage County and Western Cook. And so those districts do have that option. But that was a decision that this board made, I guess, about 5 years ago when FEDSE was disbanded. So that's a very real thing.
And well, I suspected that it was probably in here and being called something different than what we call it, but
right.
If you're looking at the comparably sized districts, you don't see it.
Right.
So you don't see that title.
Right. I would agree with your, maybe it's not agree, it wasn't, I'm not sure it was necessarily a statement or a question, but your observation about administrative salaries in aggregate in D90
mm-hmm.
being higher than particularly probably some of our immediate neighbors in West Cook. You know, there are elements that come to play. Years of service is a big one. So generally districts that have more experienced administrators and retained them, which, you know, some would argue has value, are generally going to have higher total salaries.
Well, I think our administrators are outstanding. I just, it's something that you notice.
Absolutely.
If you're looking at finances and if you're comparing our district to other districts.
Every year, the Illinois Association of School Boards puts out the average lower and upper end salaries for principals, assistant principals, other administrators. So that's probably what you see every year. Highest paid superintendent in Illinois is $350,000. I think we're well below there.
We're
well
below
room to move.
Yeah, and I think we should just stop at superintendent.
I think bigger, I mean, what I found comforting about this is the number of administrators we had seemed to be appropriate given the size of the student body and the comparable. So that was a good thing. And our administrative salaries, I was just reconfirming with Anthony, are roughly 9% of our cost, salary cost. And that's, once again, an appropriate number. So if you look at it big picture, we have a reasonable amount of administrators. Our administrative salary cost is reasonable. And even if we were to just decide, hey, let's get down to 8 administrators for whatever reason instead of 9 and let's cut one, I don't think it's going to make a difference on our levy. So then the next question is, do we have the right administrators performing the right functions? And it sounds like we do. We did hire a new administrator this year, and from what I understand, our new assistant principal at the elementary school level is doing an okay job. Is that fair?
Thus far, exemplary work.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who is he again?
Following behind, I just wanted to acknowledge the remaining documents in the packet. Are the actual position descriptions for all of those jobs. So it's one thing to have someone in the role, but I think it's a very reasonable question if someone asks, well, what does that individual actually do? What are the services or what is the value added that the individual brings or doesn't to the position? So we wanted to make sure that you had that at hand as well. So.
I thought this was good information for the board. It's good information for the community. It's something that we should be talking about and at least keeping an eye on.
Yes.
I think Barb, you'd agree we should at least be keeping an eye on this.
Very definitely.
And I don't recall actually having a report like this done, at least during my term of the board. So this is the first one I could recall being done. I think it's a nice thing to do. We should probably revisit
periodically,
like every other year. I don't think these things change annually, but you know, every other year, just to make sure that we're still
in line with
where we need
to be, and that we're comfortable with our salary allocations and getting the job done.
And not to belabor, but the evidence-based funding model, of course, has some very specific recommendations, too, about the number of administrative staff that you should have. We're actually, technically, out of compliance with evidence-based funding model because we don't have a full-time assistant principal at Hinch Elementary, but we have a very effective and efficient part-time assistant principal at each school, and he's helping to manage that.
You keep talking about this guy. I don't think he really exists.
All right, so the last item we had to share this evening was about the memorandum of understanding clarifying some of the liability elements for the Park District in a governmental agreement. Anthony, would you be willing to share just a word or two about the status of that?
Right. If you remember, this intergovernmental agreement was agreed upon by both parties, signed and executed. But there was some discussion about having this memorandum of understanding to amend and clarify sections 15 and 16. Section 15 was the Park District's insurance requirements, and section 16 was ours, in which there was some language in our section 16 about a waiver of subrogation if we and that went away if we could not obtain without any additional costs the insurance requirements that were listed there, and we could not without additional costs, so why have that in there? So we took that all out and then gave some additional details on the insurance requirements and the limits. And as of today, the Park District does not feel that this is going to be an issue. Our attorneys, after drafting this, said it did not need board action. You can choose to make it board action, but the Park District is not going that way, but it will require board signature. But we wanted to give you a chance to see it, at least in this form, and have any questions or concerns about it. Please bring it forward to us so we can amend it even further. But we feel that this does everything that was intended to do based on what the director has given us, and I guess I'll turn it back to you guys if you feel it does meet.
I do, since I'm going to be signing it. I don't want to be signing anything that the board hasn't approved, so let's make sure that the board is comfortable with the change in the insurance thing and gives me the authority to sign this. How about that?
Our insurance cooperative, our third-party administrator, Gallagher Bassett, or in our insurance cooperative called CLIC, was very excited that we were doing this, giving them the opportunity to add what they feel is the much-needed sexual abuse and misconduct section of the insurance. They know they've worked with PDERMA, which is the Park District's insurance cooperative, before, and have asked for this anytime they have a new intergovernmental agreement. And so they're hoping that the Park District also agrees. And from my discussions with Mike Slutton, the executive director, he hasn't heard anything from his board that would say that would be a problem.
I like that coverage is primary too.
Right.
So that reflects the superintendent's report tonight.
Yeah. So can I just on this one get if there's no discussion? And first off, if there's discussion, let's have it. If there's not, can I get a motion to approve execution of this memorandum of understanding with the Park District?
So moved.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore? Mr. Martieri?
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassi?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Great. All right, upcoming meetings. There will be a committee of the whole meeting on January 9th. There will be a business meeting on January 16th. There will be a January 30th professional develop meeting. There will be a January 31st meeting chaired happily by not me. All right, and with that, I just need the most important motion of the evening.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.